Welcome back to the Below Average Joe's MMA Show. On today's episode, we talk all things UFC 298 in the aftermath from an incredible pay-per-view, the first of a three straight stretch of pay-per-view events, 298, 299, and 300. This card capped off with a new featherweight champion. Ilia Topuria has dethroned the 145-pound king, Alexander Volkanovski, in very convincing fashion. We will talk about that alongside the rest of UFC 298, all of the big winners, and what could be next for each one of them. And we finally have the UFC 300 main event, and it is a good one, and it is a title fight. We'll talk about that to cap off the show at the end. But let's start with UFC 298. Wow, a new champion. All of the hype, all of the confidence, all of the swagger, it all paid off for Ilia Topuria, the Matador, that hails from Spain, has dethroned Alexander the Great Volkanovski. The featherweight champion since December of 2019 is no more. The 27-year-old undefeated phenom sits at 15-0 with 13 finishes, with the newest shiny part of that resume going with a second-round knockout over Volkanovski. Let's talk about the build-up to the fight, what happened in the fight, and most importantly, and what is most fun, what is next for Ilia Topuria? 7 wins in the UFC, 5 of them by finish, win over a top 10 opponent, Bryce Mitchell, over a top 5 opponent in Josh Emmett, and now the arguably greatest featherweight of all time, Alexander Volkanovski. That is the past 3 fights for the new champion, Ilia Topuria, who coming into this was building this fight up a lot. At the press conference, even on Thursday, got a little cringy, some would say, copying some flow from Conor McGregor, but it seemed to work. He drew a lot of attention to this fight. Alexander Volkanovski even gave him credit in doing such, and he played part by dressing as the old man and playing that shtick. We put it together. We had a very, very high level and high anticipated featherweight championship fight, and now we have the conclusion of that, which was 3 minutes and 32 seconds into the second round, where Ilia Topuria pressured Volk up against the cage and landed a right hook that sent him straight down to the canvas, unconscious and new Ilia Topuria. And he was so stoic in victory. He didn't freak out or do anything too wild, jump up and down, jump out of the cage. He just was so calm, and you could just tell he knew that confidence. You know, this is where I struggled going into the fight was, does he really believe in this confidence that he is portraying, or is he kind of just doing this to build the fight, maybe make himself almost believe it in a way? No, it is 100% authentic. I don't know if anybody can break Ilia Topuria's confidence, because if you come in against one of the best fighters of all time in Volkanovski feeling that highly about yourself, what are you going to do to the rest of the 145-pound division? And that's what's fun, because the rest of the 145-pound division is very open, because with this path that Ilia took to get to the championship, there are still a lot of stones left unturned. Like I said, he only had to beat Bryce and Josh Emmett, essentially, if we're talking ranked fighters, to get into this title opportunity, which leaves a plethora of fresh matchups. The first matchup to discuss is, of course, being on the side of Alexander Volkanovski, and so we should discuss the losing side here in Volk, someone who had been the champion for almost 5 years. He won it in December of 2019, defended the belt 5 times, including 2 defenses against Max Holloway, finishes over Yair Rodriguez in the Korean Zombie, and a back-and-forth war with Brian T-City Ortega. A long-reigning champion always will have the claim to get an immediate rematch, and I'm not saying that Volk's next fight can't be a rematch, but I don't know if it should be the next fight for Ilia Topuria, and here is why. Alexander Volkanovski has now been knocked out 2 times in less than 4 full months of calendar time. That is concerning. One via head kick, one via right hook straight to the chin that put him out completely cold. I think he needs an extended layoff. And I know coming into this fight, that was a big point of emphasis, is the fact that he does not like having layoffs. He enters into a very dark place, and he feels like he can just be a better person overall if he can constantly be in training, in camp, and getting ready for competition. If he can find some sort of hybrid to continue training hard but not necessarily in a camp, I think that would be very beneficial. I don't want to see a quick turnaround here for Volk. This was already, in a lot of people's eyes, way too quick of a turnaround after a head kick knockout loss up a weight class to a guy that carries, you know, debatably more power, just being for the simple fact that it was 10 pounds heavier. I think he needs to take a layoff at the earliest, the end of 2024. Like, get a full 6 months in before you even start training camp for your next fight, in my opinion. And maybe we don't even see him until 2025. So I love Volk. I still am a humongous Max Holloway fan. And I remember when he beat Max the first time for that championship, I couldn't stand it. I was so annoyed. I thought Max had won the fight, and I just didn't want to see anyone else be the champion. But ever since then, fight by fight, my respect and admiration has grown tremendously for Alexander Volkanovski, as has the entire MMA community. And I think that's been the best part of this title reign for Volk, is how so many people, year after year, fight after fight, have gathered around and cheered on Volk. And he's earned the respect of the entire community, of everyone that is a fighter in this fight game. And I think that is a true sign of how great of a mixed martial artist that he is. So my hat is off to him for an incredible reign, arguably the best featherweight of all time. And if he isn't, he's top three, except he's beat the other two, one of them in three times. So he's beat Jose, he's beat Max, all those title defenses. I think he is deserving of a long break. He's been doing a lot of great things for the UFC, taking fights on short notice. So he needs a break, and he can still come back in his next fight and fight for the championship at 145. I have no issue there. I just don't think it should be immediately next for Ilya, because I think he should fight sometime in the summer. And that leaves four other names. Isn't that awesome? We have five potential next matchups for Ilya Topuria. That is a good problem to have if you're a new champion, and if you're the UFC trying to promote and figure out what to do with your new shiny 27-year-old champion, undefeated champion at that. So we start with a matchup that is happening next week, February 24th, a rematch between Yair Rodriguez and Brian Ortega. Both of those guys, fresh matchups for Ilya Topuria. He has not fought either one of them. Now, Yair did fight for the title in 2023. He lost to Alexander Volkanovski. But if he bounces back, gets a big win over Brian Ortega, you could argue he could get in. If Brian Ortega can bounce back after a long layoff and beat Yair, you could argue that he gets in. All in wait, that is another person that Ilya has yet to face. Brian did have a title fight back in, geez, when was that now? 2021? Is that when that was? 2021 or 2022, he fought Volk for the featherweight strap. Yeah, in a losing effort. He hasn't been as active the past few years, so I could see a little bit more pushback if he were to get that victory and call for a title shot, but he could very much be put in. We then have the undefeated Movsar Evloev. I believe he's 8 or 9-0 in the UFC. The best part about that potential matchup is he's also on a close timeline, not as close as Yair or Brian would be, but he just fought at UFC 297 a few weeks ago, so him and Ilya would essentially line up on a pretty good calendar to have a fight. Both those guys are undefeated. I think you put those two records together, they're close to 35, 37, 38-0 combined as professionals. Obviously, both undefeated in the UFC, both on unbeaten streaks in the UFC. That would be an amazing storyline, someone that is, you know, a Dagestani-style wrestler, but carries pretty well-rounded skills that a lot of people don't discuss as much for Movsar. And Ilya has showed time and time again how polished he is in all facets of his game. And the final option is the kryptonite of the featherweight division, Max Blessed Holloway. Because if your name isn't Alexander Volkanovski, you're not beating this man at 145 pounds. But the biggest problem there, because he is coming off of a victory, in a win streak, as a matter of fact, is that he's going up to 155 pounds on April 13th to fight Justin Gaethje for the BMF title fight. And then, if Max beats Justin, he's arguably the number one contender in two different weight classes, because he's going to be ranked number two once the division gets settled and they bump Volk to one. Max will move to number two in the featherweight division. And if he beats the number two ranked lightweight, and Justin Gaethje, he's going to be in the top five minimum at lightweight as well, with a chance to lay claim to a title shot at 155 pounds. A lot of people may not like that, but if he fills out well and gets a victory, maybe he could just make a permanent transition to lightweight. Time will tell. That is still 2 months away, so he won't be on the exact same timeline as Ilya Topuria, but we've seen crazier timelines. So those are the options for Ilya, and as I said, that is a good problem to have. But oh wait, there's more. Now that we are done talking about the UFC 298 main event, where Ilya Topuria dethroned Alexander Volkanovski, we now will get into the rest of the card, and it starts in the co-main event, the middleweight division. Robert Whittaker is back in the win column. It didn't come easy, as he got the dub over Paulo Costa. The number three ranked Robert Whittaker is back in the win column after his loss to Dricus du Plessis last July, which is aging well because Dricus is now the middleweight champion of the world. But nonetheless, Bobby Knuckles gets the dub. He gets it in a decision over the number six ranked Paulo Costa in what was only Paulo's third fight since losing to Israel Adesanya back in September of 2020. That is still just a wild stat to wrap your head around. And this was a wild fight, because this was, in my opinion, the fight of the night. Technically, it was Amanda Lemos and Mackenzie Dern, which was a great fight we'll get into here in a little bit. But I thought this was the best fight of all of UFC 298. Back and forth for 15 minutes. Paulo Costa landed a massive spinning wheel kick that almost put Bobby Knuckles away at the very end of round number one. He fights back in rounds two and three. They go tit for tat for 15 straight minutes. It was what we were anticipating. We all knew that this was going to be a great fight going in, and that is exactly what happened here in the aftermath. What could be next here is fun to discuss, because middleweight's kind of on fire right now. And I've said this time and time again this year, because every single week we're getting meaningful middleweight fights. At UFC 297, we got the middleweight championship main event. A week after that, we got Nassourdin Imavov beating Roman Dolidze. That was number 11 versus number 8. Last week, we got Joe Pyfer fighting Jack Hermanson. Jack Hermanson held his spot in the top 15. Now we got number 3 versus number 6 and Robert Whittaker and Paulo Costa. Not to mention, number 15 ranked Anthony Hernandez opened up the main card, which we'll hit on here in a little bit. The 185-pound division right now is cooking. We have had, and bear with me here, I'm going to count how many ranked fighters have fought just now until February 18th of 2024. Yeah, I just went and counted, actually. 8 of the top 15 fighters in the world at 185 pounds have competed in the first month and a half of 2024. That is what you want to see in a division that has been kind of stale the last few years. We have rankings churning, we have people climbing, we have people dropping, and we have a fresh new champion with Dricus du Plessis. Really, that's all we've had the past 2 years, is the championship belt getting passed around like a hot potato. Yes, I used the same analogy as I did last week. Deal with it. This is awesome. This is an awesome time right now for the middleweight division. It's something that is needed for this division. There's not necessarily anything that jumps off the page. But then again, I guess now that I'm thinking about it, as I say that, maybe we do get Sean Strickland versus Robert Whittaker. It's a fight that hasn't happened. Whittaker's essentially fought everybody else in this division. Not literally, but he has fought quite a few of them. Why not do it? Sean Strickland coming off of losing the championship. Robert Whittaker, if he can get one more, he can lay a solid claim to getting a title fight next. There is a world where maybe he could jump right in for the immediate title shot. I don't personally see that happening, to be honest with you. But you do have the built-in story of Dricus beating, not only beating, but knocking out Robert Whittaker last July. But I'm more on the side of, I'd like to see him fight one more time, and then Dricus can, you know, maybe defend against Israel Adesanya in the time being. I still think that is the fight that's going to happen most likely coming soon. I think you could do easily, because I know Sean Strickland isn't going to say no to any fights. Strickland versus Whittaker, 5-round main event on a fight night card. Sign me up for that 10 times out of 10. Next, we move to the welterweight division, where Ian Machado Gary remained perfect, 14-0, 7-0 in the UFC. He wins the grudge match, if you will, even though they were pretty buddy-buddy this week, and they touched gloves at least 27 times in their fight on Saturday. But he gets the nod over Jeff Neal, who was ranked number 8. And, you know, say what you want about the guy, negatively or positively, he is bringing attention to himself and to his fights. And that is a good thing at the end of the day from a business perspective if you're the UFC. And Ian Gary is a legitimate talent. He is long, he is rangy, he has good fight IQ, he can adjust well. Now, he makes good decisions in the cage, and I like the progression. I remember back after the Song Ki-Nong fight, I think is when this first went into the air, because I remember discussing it with Noah. He made this six-fight plan where he wanted to do six fights progressively up the welterweight ranks en route to getting a title shot. Well, there's the first three. He knocked out Daniel Rodriguez, he beat Neil Magny, and now he has a win over number 8, Jeff Neal. So he will enter officially the top 10 come Tuesday morning, more than likely enter right in at that number 8 spot where Jeff Neal was. But instead of kind of working his way up the ladder one or two spots, my buddy and I were maybe throwing around him and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, two long-rangey strikers. I think that would be a really technically fun striking match there. He went right up to the top of the totem pole and called out former three-time title challenger Colby Chaos Covington. And I'm going to be honest with you, I think not only is that a fight that the UFC will push for and try and make, because that's two of the biggest names in the 170-pound division right now, I think that's a fight that Colby Covington truly believes that he will win. And I think that is a fight that Colby Covington would accept. I really do. I would see him accepting this fight over a fight such as Shavkat Rakhmonov 10 times out of 10. And I think that's absolutely what is next. I think Ian Machado Gary is going to get what he called for against Colby Chaos Covington. And if he wins, love it or hate it, Ian Machado Gary would all of a sudden be the front runner for a welterweight title shot. Merab Dawalish Wili is an absolute machine. He is the 2024 version of the Terminator, as he just rallied off his 10th straight victory. He has not lost since April 21st of 2018. Shout out to War, Ricky Simone, baby. But 10 straight victories since then. And my goodness, the resume that he's racking up is amazing. Dating back to 2020, John Dotson, former title challenger, Cody Stamann, Marlon Moraes, former title challenger, Jose Aldo, we know everything we need to know about Jose Aldo, Petr Yan, former title challenger and champion, and Henry Cejudo, former two-weight world champion, Olympic gold medalist. There aren't many resumes in the sport right now that are like Merab's, and he is next for the Bantamweight Championship of the World. Dana White confirmed it at the UFC 298 post-fight press conference. Hallelujah, thank goodness. He's going to be next. He will get the winner of Sean O'Malley and Marlon Chito Vera 2 going down at UFC 299 March 9th. Sean O'Malley was in attendance in one of the most luscious-looking coats I have ever seen. That thing looked like it could keep you warm for years. And he kept a very stoic, unimpressed, stature in the result, in the aftermath of this fight with Merab. I want to see that fight badly. Now, I'm not counting out Chito Vera. He's already beat Sean O'Malley once. He could win that fight again. And even still, Merab versus Marlon Chito Vera is also a super fun fight. Any fight that Merab's going to get put into is going to be nonstop, for the simple fact of the matter that he will not stop rushing at his opponents. I will say in this fight with Henry, the first round he fought a little out of his element. He was kind of just having a striking match, and that is what allowed Henry Cejudo to have his most success. But in rounds 2 and 3, he went back to the well. He pushed forward with his heavy pace. It looked good in the striking, landed big shots as well, but was taking Henry Cejudo down essentially at will. Carried him across the cage at one point like Matt Hughes and Frank Trigg. And I'm pretty sure Frank Trigg was the ref for that fight. Actually, no, it wasn't. It was Jonathan Romero. Jonathan, I apologize. But what a performance. What a victory. And Merab's star power is really continuing to grow. He's doing funny skits on social media. He's interacting with the crowd at the press conferences. He's being wild. He's being crazy. And he backs it all up in the cage. You have all the storylines you need, especially if he lines up to fight Sean O'Malley. I can see the promo video now. Merab takes Sean O'Malley's jacket. Oh, I mean, that could be the poster. I think the poster for Merab versus Sean O'Malley should just be them with the red and black jacket. One photo of each of them. Who wore it better? But I digress. That sounds like I'm taking credit away from Marlon Vera. Regardless, that is an incredible fight between Vera and Merab as well. I had to say that twice just for the simple fact to know I'm not discrediting Cheeto. So I'm excited to see what will happen March 9th, because O'Malley and Vera 2 is going to be a great fight. Going to honestly be a stand-up war for as long as that fight goes. And the winner knows who they will have next. Merab Dawalish Wheelie. As I alluded to earlier, the number 15 ranked middleweight in the world, Anthony Fluffy Hernandez, got a victory. And he did it in fantastic fashion. A great fight with Roman Kopylov. Two guys that were coming in on four-fight win streaks. One of those streaks had to come to a close, and that was Kopylov. Anthony Hernandez has now won five straight fights, four of them via finish. There's no one that has that dog in him more right now at 185 than Anthony Hernandez, man. He hasn't lost since May 16th of 2020 in a knockout to Kevin Holland that happened just over a minute into the fight. And now he is on a tear. He's entering into his prime years at 30 years old. Give this guy someone close to that top 10. I'm looking at the division right now. I think you could put him in with Chris Curtis would be a fun matchup. I think him and Jack Hermanson would be fun. Although after Jack's win, I think he should fight Nassourdin Imavov, to be honest with you. Roman Dolidze and Anthony Hernandez. I think you do Roman or Chris Curtis next for Anthony. Give him a step up. That would be number 13 or number 9. After this victory, I could see him climbing a spot or two in these rankings, to be quite honest with you. Give Anthony some... you know what? I'm going to commit to it. Why not? Roman Dolidze, Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. Let's make it happen, UFC. John Anik even called for Anthony Hernandez to get a main event. And you know what, John? I'm with you. And last but not least, outside of some quick mentions throughout the rest of the prelims, but Amanda Lemosh got a victory, a bounce-back victory at that. She's won three of her last four fights. She finished Michelle Watterson-Gomez. She knocked out Marina Rodriguez. She lost to Zhang Weili in August in a title fight. One of the most impressive title fight performances in the history of the UFC is what Zhang Weili put on in that fight. But she bounces back here with a victory over Mackenzie Dern. Shout out to Mackenzie. She did take this fight on a few weeks' notice. Kind of saved this fight. I don't even remember, actually, now that I think about it, who Amanda's opponent was supposed to be. Someone let me know if you remember in the comments. I'll find it after the fact, of course. But Amanda Lemosh gets a victory over Mackenzie Dern in what was the official fight of the night for UFC 298. And, you know, again, I thought it should have been Whitaker and Costa, but if you're going to give it to any other fight on the card, you make it this fight right here. It was very good, very back and forth. Mackenzie Dern, somehow, I guess, according to Dana, didn't break her orbital bone, but it looked like she took, it would have been a left hook to her right eye, and she immediately kind of crumbled down, held her face. It looked very bad. And not only did she not get finished in that instance, but she came back and could have arguably won this fight. But Amanda gets it done. I think it was unanimously 29-28. She's one of the most fun... Honestly, these two are two of the most fun fighters in the 115-pound division. And right now, we do know that the title fight is happening at UFC 300. Yan Xiaonan versus Zhang Weili. Oh yeah, that's who it was. Tatiana Suarez. There you go. You don't even have to look any further. Rebook the original fight. Tatiana Suarez, Amanda Lemosh. That is what happens next. I'm one of the biggest Tatiana Suarez fans there is. I really enjoy watching Amanda Lemosh fight. Those two clashing is very interesting. I obviously lean Tatiana because, honestly, I lean Tatiana over pretty much every other woman in this division. Maybe even the champion Zhang Weili. But we have that title fight happening in April. I'd love to see the original fight get rebooked. Number two, Tatiana. Number three, Lemosh. Put them together. The winner gets the winner of UFC 300's title fight. And throughout the rest of the card, we saw Marcos Rogério de Lima chop down Junior Taffa. Yes, it was supposed to be Justin Taffa. Then on weigh-in day, he got injured, and his brother literally stepped in on a day's notice and fought Marcos Rogério de Lima. So a big TKO victory that was started with leg kicks. It was brutal there. Renny Nakamura extends his perfect record. Unfortunately for the bet slip, he didn't get a finish, but it was a kind of a weird, funky fight, so it is what it is. That dude at 23 years old is a legitimate future, in my opinion, title challenger at 135 pounds. Zhang Mingyang had a huge debut. He knocked out Brinson Ribeiro. Danny Barlow debuted and knocked out Josh Quinlan. Oban Elliott debuted and beat Val Woodburn. Three straight debutants in a row on this card from last year's season of the Contender Series. Well, and Zhang was from Road to the UFC. All got wins back to back to back. And to start the card, Miranda Maverick will enter back into the women's flyweight rankings, where she got a unanimous decision over Andrea Lee. And last but not least, we have to talk about UFC 300. The main event is official. Dana White announced it at the post-fight press conference. And really, the UFC social media didn't waste any time having a graphic ready to blast right after UFC 298's broadcast came to a close. And it will be the light heavyweight championship getting defended for the first time by Alex Pereira, the former middleweight champion, the current 205-pound champion that beat Jiří Prochazka in November to earn his second weight championship in the UFC, and he is welcoming back the former champion Jamal Hill, who will be returning for his first fight since January of last year in a crazy, crazy five-rounder with Glover Teixeira. He tore his Achilles in July during International Fight Week of 2023. He will be back in April to headline UFC 300. That is what we got. That is the headliner, and I'm all for it. If you're out there saying that this is a letdown and this card stinks, you are absolutely out of your mind. You look at this card and compare it to 200, compare it to 100. Yes, you don't have, you know, a Brock Lesnar name in the sense of the modern day Conor McGregor. UFC 200 honestly kind of fell apart, to be quite honest with you. So really, it's just comparing 300 to 100. This is an incredible card. It is one of the most stacked cards we will ever see in the history of mixed martial arts. Enjoy it. Don't complain. We've got two world title fights. We've got a five-round BMF fight between Gaethje and Holloway. There's 28,000 ranked fighters from top to bottom on this card. It is unbelievable, and I am ecstatic to see it. So give me all your thoughts on the main event. Were you expecting Pereira versus Hill? Because I did not see this specific fight coming. I thought it may have been Izzy going up to 205 to fight Pereira, or honestly, Izzy versus Drickus at middleweight is what I felt strongly was going to be the main event. But no, we get the return of Jamal Hill, and he's taking on Alex Pereira. Not to mention, Dana White did say there's still one final fight to announce for UFC 300, but he just can't say it yet. So obviously, it's not a main event because we have that, but it's on UFC 300, meaning it's going to be a pretty big fight nonetheless. So let me know what you think that could be, and I'm sure we'll be getting that sometime soon because we are officially under 2 months away from one of the most monumental cards in mixed martial arts history. So that is it for today's recap show. Let me know all of your thoughts on all of the biggest results from UFC 298, a new champion, contenders emerging, prospects turning into contenders, and everything in between, plus UFC 300 getting its main event. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you have a great week, and we will be back on Friday to discuss UFC Mexico and PFL versus Bellator, and hopefully some more MMA news coming throughout the week as well. Catch you then.